You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. A brief program note on the next Talk of the Nation in this hour on Monday. Join Neil Conan and his guests for news on the latest developments from Iraq. But for the rest of this hour, we're going to be talking about SARS. You know it as a severe acute respiratory syndrome. It continues its world tour, making stops first in China, Hong Kong, Toronto. The disease has now been reported in Australia, Vietnam, Singapore, among other countries, and as many as 100 suspected cases are under investigation in the United States, of course. So let's get a little bit of a SARS update. What have scientists learned about the organism so far? How can a sometimes fatal illness just seem to pop up overnight out of nowhere? Joining me to talk more about SARS is Dr. C.J. Peters. He is a virologist and an epidemiologist, formerly at the CDC, and he is now at the University of Texas Medical Branch in Galveston. He is also a co-author of Virus Hunter, 30 Years of Battling Hot Viruses Around the World, published by Doubleday. He joins us by phone from San Antonio. Welcome back to Science Friday, Dr. Peters.
Hi, thank you. It's good to be here.
Do we know where SARS came from yet, how it started?
No, I'm afraid we don't. We have identification. We're, I think, 95% sure that it's caused by a virus that belongs to a family of viruses called coronaviruses. So it's a coronavirus, but it's not like any one we've had before. They usually just call, there are two other coronaviruses in humans that cause the common cold.
Mm-hmm. So we don't know why this decided to rear its ugly head right now.
Well, you know, one of the things that I've always speculated about, and many others, is that the real concern is virus transfer across species. We know that that's how, for example, measles originated thousands of years ago and smallpox. So if it's happened before, it can happen again. And it happened with HIV. So maybe it's happening now with a coronavirus from animals that we just don't know anything about, but that has adapted itself to fairly efficient transmission with humans.
Mm-hmm. Could it also have other possibilities? Could it have been a virus that, you know, leaked out of a test tube someplace?
I don't think so. I mean, these are very complicated viruses for an RNA virus, and I don't think that we know enough to synthesize one de novo. I think that, you know, it's possible, there are other possibilities. It's possible that this virus has picked up a gene someplace that helps it in its pathogenicity, makes it worse.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-989-8255 is our number. Talking with C.J. Peters about this SARS virus. How has it behaved in the weeks since it's been discovered? Is it getting more lethal? Is it less lethal than we thought?
I mean, I think there's two parts to that question. One part is, what is the virus really doing? And, you know, if it really is a trans-species movement, it may be in an unstable state, and it might just fizzle out, or it might get worse. But the other question is, do we know what it's doing? And since we've just isolated it and just begun to do tests on a very few patients, there are a lot of big questions about its behavior that we don't know. We don't know if there are asymptomatic infections. That might be considered good news because the person didn't get sick, but it might be bad news if they shed the virus. And we don't know that they're walking around temporarily shedding virus. So there's just a lot of unknowns. It looks like the mortality from the different outbreaks and so on has run around 2-4% of the infected patients.
And how does that compare with more well-known viruses that are sort of strange, like let me pull out West Nile virus, for example?
Oh, West Nile virus is maybe it's maybe 10% of the sick people, but maybe 1 in 500 of infected people.
Mm-hmm. So how this ranks then?
Pretty high.
Yeah.
Given that the caveat, we don't know exactly how many people are infected.
And so, and that's because people may have it and not even know it.
People may have it and not even know it. People may have a different infection, and we call it SARS. I mean, to be called SARS in the U.S., all you have to do is come back in a plane from China and have fever and a cough. So, a little further, you have to have an abnormal chest X-ray. Mm-hmm. But basically, you know, we're using that definition because we haven't brought the lab test to bear. we started bringing them to bear, and we're confirming some of those. And of course, some have been confirmed in Toronto. And
And what would a lab test consist of? How would it know if you've got SARS or not?
It looks as though SARS is going to be like most viral diseases. You get sick, and you have the virus in your system, and so the lab test would be a test that looked for the virus, maybe in your sputum, maybe in your throat wash. And then as you begin to get well, you begin to make antibodies against the virus, and it's no longer found. And so you would get someone who had recovered, and you would look for the antibodies that he had made as he recovered from the infection.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. Let's go to Baton Rouge with Tim. Hi, Tim.
Hi there. I just have a question about our military in Southeast Asia. I was wondering, are they being given any special instructions so as not to put their loved ones in danger when returning home to the United States?
Good question.
Yeah, I wish I had an answer. One of the advantages of being an expert and not working for the government is you can say, I don't know.
Well, we'll have to. We're going to keep updating and following the story. We'll get an answer for you because that is an interesting question. But as you say, there we've seen pictures of people in airports being tested right on the spot.
We're putting people on notice when they come back from areas that are known to have the disease, and they're being instructed to. At any sign of illness, and this has not been fully tested yet to see if it'll work, but the instructions are at any sign of illness, they should put on a surgical mask, they should be careful with their secretions, they should call the hospital emergency room and tell them that they've come back from overseas and that they have a respiratory infection. And the hospital will set up a place for them to come so that other people won't be exposed. And they can come in and be examined. And if they have it, they'll be admitted to the hospital.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, there is no cure yet for this disease.
That's right.
And so what do? You treat the symptoms as best you can, and most people survive it.
Most people survive it. You keep them. One of the advantages of having them in the hospital is that they're not infecting other people. And another advantage is you can observe them, and if they get very sick, they may have to go into the intensive care unit. But even many of those patients are surviving.
Mm-hmm. You've written your book, Virus Hunter, 30 Years of Battling Hot Viruses Around the World. Do you have to write another chapter now?
Well, yeah, but on the other hand, you can read Chapter 11, and it talks about a virus moving from, in this case, bats into human beings. And adapting to humans, and it describes some of the factors that lead to the emergence of these kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. And there's been speculation, and you have talked about it, that this might have moved from species to species, from animal to animal, and it is, of course, it originated in China, where there's a rural community and a farming community.
I think that's a very important link.
Is it possible that there might be a vaccine? Should we be able to identify this better?
Yeah, there are some very successful vaccines against animal coronaviruses. Coronaviruses in domestic animals are a very serious economic problem. They cause respiratory disease by spreading throughout the system, and gastrointestinal disease. And there are successful vaccines against these agents that are used in animals. Mm-hmm. And that's good news because it suggests that we won't be caught in a situation like we are with HIV, where we just don't know how to make a vaccine.
Mm-hmm. Is this vaccine mutating quickly like HIV does?
We don't know. We don't have enough sequence information to know about the genetics of this guy.
Mm-hmm. And so people who, you know, come down with flu-like symptoms or the sniffling they're reading now, or they're hearing us talk about what the symptoms are, should they immediately rush to the hospital, or should you only do that if you've come from Southeast Asia or Hong Kong, places like that?
If you've come from Southeast Asia, Hong Kong, or if you've been in contact with someone who has SARS, or if you're a medical person. One of the big problems in Toronto was that they had a SARS patient on the ward and later in the intensive care unit who was diagnosed as something else. And so there was ample opportunity for spread without any precautions being taken. I think this, parenthetically, this may change. If this keeps up at this pace, this may change our entire way of handling patients in the emergency room. We may have to have two emergency rooms. You go into one emergency room and the staff are taking full precautions. You take full precautions when you come in because you may just have a cold and not SARS. And you'll have to be tested on the spot. We'll have to have more rapid tests for this.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about SARS this hour on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. I'm Ira Flatto, talking with C.J. Peters, author of Virus Hunter, 30 Years of Battling Hot Viruses Around the World. There are now systems being put up, alert systems among hospitals sharing data, epidemiology data, when something, a hot zone shows up of cases. Is that being helpful here?
I think it is. I think this is, they're calling it syndromic surveillance. You don't worry about making a diagnosis. You just tabulate the number of people who come in with respiratory infections.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally think it's not very useful for some things, but for this, it's extremely useful because you can look around the city. You find a couple of cases of SARS. You can look around the city and find out whether there is a major augmentation in the emergency room and you have an unsuspected but major epidemic on your hands.
Mm-hmm.
I would actually prefer, though, to have real diagnostics for these things available and affordable so that when someone comes in with a respiratory disease, you make a diagnosis. You can tell whether it's influenza A, influenza B, SARS, dot, dot, dot. That would be a tremendous advance in medical care, and it would decrease the illegitimate, if you will, use of antibiotics.
Can you tell at this point how rapidly it's spreading and whether it's going to overwhelm hospitals?
I like to think of this as you're getting ready to cross the street and you see a car coming and it's coming pretty fast. You don't know whether it's going to break or not. Well, you better get out of the way. And I think we have to be concerned, but I think we don't know yet whether we're going to be able to control it. I think it's going to be a very close thing.
Mm-hmm. And it's going to be expensive then.
Oh, yes. Those N95 masks, which is what is mostly recommended for having better respiratory protection, let me just digress for a second. We believe, parenthetically, that this is transmitted by closer contact, by droplets or perhaps even by getting it on your hands and so on. So the respiratory protection is being used for healthcare workers and so on, but that factory is already a week behind in its orders. It's being stressed, and of course, all that money is being spent. The interruption of the airline movements, the situation with semiconductor manufacturing, and other things that are being made in the highly affected areas is being severely impacted.
That's great economic stimulus to try to control us as soon as possible. Thank you, Dr. Peters, for joining us. C.J. Peters is a virologist and epidemiologist at the University of Texas Medical Branch in Galveston. He is also co-author of Virus Hunter, 30 Years of Battling Hot Viruses Around the World, published by Doubleday. Thanks again. Earlier, we spoke to David Page of the Whitehead Institute and John Klein of the Picatinny Arsenal. Our program is produced by Annette Heist, Adrian McDonald, Clementine Wallace, and senior producer Karen Vergoth. Charles Berquist is our web producer and director, and if you'd like to write to us, please send your letters to Talk of the Nation Science Friday, 1221 6th Avenue, 37th floor, New York, New York, 10021. Or if you missed any of the links that we talk about here, you go to our website, you can leave us an email there also, at sciencefriday.com, and we have Science Friday's Kids Connection there, where we're creating free curricula for students and teachers. You can download it from there. And also, any of the links, as I say, we talk about on the hour here that you've missed, you can go to the site and jot those down. I'm Ira Flatto in New York.